welcome back to the Manchester Weekly from the Mill. I'm Molly Simpson, and today I'm joined by my colleague Jack Dohanty. Jack, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
So today we're discussing your fascinating weekend read into a new homeless camp springing up under the porticos of Manchester Town Hall. We'll get to that in a moment, but first we're going to thank our sponsor for today's episode. Manchester Museum's got a new exhibition out called Wild. It opens on 5th of June. The exhibition will explore how people are creating and repairing their connections with nature, from post-industrial urban landscapes like Manchester to Aboriginal-led cultural revegetation projects in Western Australia.
That is a mouthful.
It's such a hard word. And the reintroduction of wolves in Yellowstone National Park in the US. We can't wait to see it. And we have a little reader call out involved in this. If you'd like to email us a photo and a short description of your favourite wild space in your local area, whether that's an abandoned mill, a lovely spot in your local park. We've had some great photos already of Dovestone Reservoir, various other little spots near the Peak District. We'll be publishing our favourite ones in future newsletters in the Mill, and you'll get a nice curator's tour of the exhibition. So please email us at editor@manchestermill.co.uk with your favourite wild space to get involved. Okay, so on to today's main story. On Friday 22nd of March, tents started gathering under the porticos outside Manchester Town Hall in St Peter's Square. The camp grew out of a protest against the government's response to the conflict in Gaza. An activist named Emma was protesting the government not halting arms sales to Israel, and seeing the sleeping bags under the porticos gave her an idea. Within a few days, dozens of tents were outside the town hall and there was a waiting list to join the camp. Manchester's most pressing social problem was playing out right in front of the council's nose. Now, Manchester City Council say the camp is over. 51 people from the camp have accepted a place in temporary accommodation, while 5 chose to remain. Deputy Council Leader Joanne Midgley has said in a statement that while we welcome attempts to help the homeless, we cannot welcome an environment where vulnerable people are put at risk and others feel intimidated, and that this camp is clearly untenable and not in the best interests of either the vulnerable people in it or the wider community who are impacted by it. The offer will remain open to those 5 people who have already refused temporary accommodation, but the camp has come to an end. So what does this story tell us about the complexity of trying to help people get off the streets, and why, when it comes to homelessness, good intentions aren't always enough? Jack, first of all, can you tell us how you came across this story?
I came across it when I just came across the tents. Like, I suppose anyone else came across the story in that way. I think I got off the tram and just saw it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I started to think a little bit more about it. And then I think it was you actually found a GoFundMe that was put up for it. And they were looking to raise money for... Oh, yeah, it was a fundraiser. And they were looking to raise money for tents to bait, so that they could buy more of those for the people who wanted to live there. Then I got in touch with the organiser, Mary, who was the main sort of fundraiser. And then after a few chats with them, it was something more of a complex thing in the end. It wasn't just a homelessness camp in the first instance.
Yeah, so what were the aims of the camp initially, and how did it sort of come together?
Yeah, so you alluded to it in the intro. Essentially, it started as a campaign against the conflict in the Middle East, but more specifically, it was to do with the British government not halting arms sales. So it was started off as a sort of don't fund genocide, fund our community, to quote the title that was given to it. And the woman who was sort of spearheading that protest, Emma, she's been involved before with homelessness protests, so there was a very big one in 2015 where homelessness camps were cropping up all over Manchester City Centre, but also outside the Town Hall and in St Peter's Square, similar to this one. And she was one of the volunteers then who helped with that, and she's someone who's had experiences with homelessness as a young person. She started it in protest against that, saying that we should put more money into helping homeless people than we do sending arms to foreign conflicts. And then afterwards, the homeless people who began to join the camp alongside the non-homeless people wanted it to stay. So then she, in her own words, just kind of ultimately felt bad and didn't want to say no to them. So she let it continue. So the people who were there as activists originally left tents for homeless people. Then some of them stuck around to sort of become these de facto organisers of it, fundraising money for more tents. And it sort of grew into an actual community.
What was the setup of the camp? Was it literally just tents all lining under the porticos? Was there anything?
There was two camps. So there was one opposite the tram stops.
Right.
And then there was another one around the other side outside the police station. And yeah, as you say, there were just rows of tents, all trespass tense, which was quite ironic.
Trespass
because of the brand was trespass. But because of the way that this has gone, the way that the council have responded to it seems sort of ironic in hindsight.
That's interesting. And we'll get into whether the camp was a force for good or not in a sec. But first, can you tell us a bit about how necessary is this initiative? Like, what does it tell us about how bad the rough sleeping problem is in Greater Manchester? And how bad has it got?
Yeah, so rough sleeping is a huge thing in Greater Manchester. Partly, it's a big thing all over the UK, but it's a big thing in Greater Manchester because of Andy Burnham and his multiple campaigns and the way that he has led his mayoral campaign in. On ending rough sleeping. So when he ran for mayor in 2017, he said that he would end rough sleeping in Greater Manchester by 2020 with a scheme called A Bed Every Night. That didn't end up happening. Numbers fell for several years, and then the official count recorded 149 people sleeping in Greater Manchester late last year, which was a rise from 102 the year before. Burnham says that that's a result of government policies. We've written about how a bed every night's not, it is without doubt a force for good, but whether or not you can tackle a issue as complex as homelessness and rough sleeping with an initiative like that, I think that's what we've seen over the past few years.
Mm.
And that it does, it in some cases, as we've written about before, it can change someone's priority need to get into temporary accommodation.
Mm.
I guess that's a different discussion because we're just talking about rough sleeping. It helps rough sleepers, but then you also have some rough sleepers who are entrenched, some who can't be housed with other people because there might be a danger to the public, which is something that we wrote about in this piece. One of the people who were living in the camp when it was still going, called Declan, had previous charges for arson, so he couldn't get the same accommodation. When you end up in a situation like that, it becomes more and more difficult for the council to be able to help you. In terms of how required this initiative was, as in the homeless camp, it really depends on your own perspective on it. If you work for the council, you probably think that actually it's helped no one. For the people who lived there, it was very much a boon because it meant that rather than everyone being a rough sleeper or rough sleepers being disparate across the city centre, so living in doorways in the gay village or somewhere else, it meant that they were all together and that therefore they could all support each other. There is also arguments against that. You know, homeless charities like Mustard Tree made the argument that in the case of refugees and asylum seekers, actually perpetuated rough sleeping because it gave them a sense that there was no other option other than that, and they didn't really understand the services that were available to them because the camp possibly gave them the idea that they shouldn't be going to the council because the council do nothing. The camp sort of, there was a dissonance to it, I thought, because they once said that they wanted the council to do more. That's why the camp was there. The stated aim of the camp was to get all these people housed by the council, but then the other stated idea that the camp held was like, well, we have to do this because the council don't do anything.
Mm.
And it was like, those were opposing ideas that didn't really fit together.
Mm.
And that, I suppose you're probably going to ask me what the criticisms were.
A little, yeah. I'm intrigued because it's such a complex problem, homelessness, and you have very well-intentioned ideas like certain charities in the city that hand out free cups of tea and hot drinks and food that's left over from Pret or Greg's. And that for some people is maybe their only chance to get a hot meal. But other people who are working in homelessness will say, no, this is actually perpetuating homelessness and it's preventing people from getting into a situation where they can support themselves.
Well, like the cups of tea do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's more the argument that it perpetuates rough sleeping.
Mm.
Because then it means that someone can live on the streets and still get a hot meal and all that kind of thing. There have been arguments to get, it depends on where you stand on it. A lot of people now would probably say that it's still a good thing to make sure that people are eating and stuff like that. But then there was and is an argument that, like, if you offer too much to people who are sleeping, you'll perpetuate them doing it.
You need to disincentivize.
You do massively. I think a lot of it's around, like, disincentivizing begging as well.
Mm.
There is, funnily enough, a guy who's running for mayor...
against
Andy Burnham, Nick Buckley. He has a lot of different ideas about how to run the city region, and I mean, we can probably conjecture that he won't become mayor because of. But that's not necessarily because he's got terrible ideas, it's just because Andy Burnham's so clearly a shoo-in for so many people. But his ideas for homeless would be you would completely eradicate begging, and then you would therefore eradicate rough sleeping because there would be no incentive, there'd be no way to make any money, there'd be no real way to survive. No, he also still runs the idea of a bed every night, but in a much more stringent way Mm. I won't get into the way that Bed Every Night works now, because I think that's a completely different conversation. To get onto the criticisms of this camp, it was mainly just that it's unsafe, haphazard, and not properly managed. But then the instant argument against that is like, well, so is a bunch of homeless people living all over the place and no one knows where they are.
Or they're not visible and the cops exactly. can't identify them to help them.
Yeah.
I guess the competing arguments and the criticisms really interest me, because it just highlights how complex a problem homelessness is. And even with the most well-intentioned interventions, you can not quite get it right. You can not quite seem to tackle it in the right way.
Yeah, it's very much like a multi-pronged thing, isn't it? Which is why there's no fix or solution to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Can you talk to us a little bit about the people who were living in this camp? You mentioned them briefly just then. Like, what was their outlook on what it was like? You know, we've got the council weighing in saying we're unsure that this was in the best interests of people in the wider community and people who were rough sleepers. You've got various homeless charities with different views on it. But what about the people who actually lived there? Like, what did they make of the conditions, and what was their outlook on whether it helped or not?
Well, I only spoke to two people. Let's bear that in mind. There was a lot of people living in this camp who didn't want to speak to me, or didn't have English, so couldn't speak to me in any sort of meaningful way. The two people I did speak to, which were Declan and Jacqueline, were both in a similar situation in literally the fact that they both had previous charges, and each of those charges were for arson, which made it a lot harder for them to get into accommodation because they were technically like a risk to others. So to people like that who have been rough sleeping for a very long time, Declan's been a rough sleeper for 5 years, it was massive for him, because he was like, this is... I feel more safe than I ever have. Or I know everyone here, because he knows all the other rough sleepers who live on the streets in Manchester. So for him and for Jacqueline, Jacqueline hadn't been there as long as he had. She'd only just arrived the day that I got there. She'd just got out of prison and she'd been living at the airport. And she was only really starting a time there and was talking about the drugs in the camp, the fact that everyone in the camp was drinking, that kind of thing. But again, like, those issues, which also perpetuate rough sleeping, aren't something that were being caused by the camp. You can bet that, you know, people also would have been doing those things if they weren't in the camp and if they were scattered everywhere. So to the people who were living there for a minute, for a time, I guess, they had more of a sense of community than they did when they were alone.
Mm.
Whether or not that means the camp actually was doing them any good is a different question.
Yeah, community is clearly a very important thing. I did a bit of reporting last month on homelessness after a video emerged of a Greater Manchester police constable kicking and dragging a homeless man on the ground, and spent some time with this charity called Two Brews, and they were describing how some of the rough sleepers they know will get into temporary accommodation for a bit and then leave because none of their mates are there and there's no one around them who supports them. I think sometimes when you're feeling that vulnerable, you need those people around you, and that can be a huge disincentive to sort of take yourself away from that situation, even if it might be ultimately in your long-term best interests.
Mm.
It's very, very complicated. So 51 people have now left the camp, 5 have chosen to remain. I went along on Wednesday, just after the council had helped some of the people leave and get to temporary accommodation. I just asked a couple of people, you know, why did you choose to stay? And they sort of shrugged. I mean, I guess that's the kind of response you got when you try to chat to people too. Some people are naturally a bit reluctant. But what kind of situation, the people who've left, what kind of situation are they in now? Have you heard from the activists?
Yeah, so they're in temporary accommodation now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only hearing dribs and drabs, really. A lot of them are saying that they're a bit dubious about how long that accommodation will last and whether or not they're going to end up back in a camp or back on the street at some point. There was a lot of videos coming out of the police presence there when they were, you know, opening people's tents and telling them that they were needing to leave because it was council property and that kind of thing. We actually described it as an eviction, didn't we, in a newsletter, and then the council got in touch with us to say that it wasn't technically an eviction because they were helping them into accommodation.
Yeah, that's right.
Which, yeah, that is true, but I think to the naked eye, it looked like an eviction. If you look at the videos with police unzipping people's tents and being like, you need to leave now, you know, and that kind of thing, it had all of that energy. So I understand the activists' anger and the reason why they're referring to it that way, but that was basically what happened. But in terms of what I've heard since, like I say, not massive amounts.
Yeah, and we've done a lot of reporting on homelessness now. We've looked into A Bed Every Night, how that policy could be benefiting the rough sleeper community in the ways in which it might not be. Temporary accommodation, how the big influx of asylum seekers into the city has affected the homelessness issue. We've looked at the police response to homelessness, like At this point, like, what do you think can be done to change things and kind of move things on for the better for the homelessness community? It's such a huge question.
It is a massive question.
I think, you know, politicians can't really answer. But I guess one thing we've observed is the conditions in temporary accommodation. Like, that is seeming to put people off. The MEN's done a lot of great reporting on this and what the B&Bs are like for people who go and get off the streets and go and live there. That does seem to be putting people off.
Well, yeah, I mean, when we've written about homelessness before, it's more issues within the system of dealing with it. It's not as simple as a housing issue or that we don't have enough housing, because we find that that's often not the case. Manchester has loads of social housing.
Mm.
Well, there's the argument that because of the way that A Bed Every Night works, it puts certain people ahead of others in the priority bands. That's what came out in, God, if you go back to that piece from 2022, there's something called the Grey Report, but not the Grey Report that we all know and love, which was the coronavirus response one. This was more a guy called Tim Grey,
we'll
a different guy.
In the show notes.
Yeah, yeah, a homelessness consultant who came up with all these different things. He came up with the social impact bond, which is really interesting if anyone wants to read about that. Or he was one of the people behind the social impact bond. But he wrote a kind of quite damning report on the way that Manchester's homelessness directorate worked, and in that talked about how there was way too much of an over-reliance on temporary accommodation. The amount of money that's being made in temporary accommodation is ridiculous. I think more, maybe, it's about getting less of a reliance on that. But that's in itself just like a hugely complex thing. If you speak to people like Nick Buckley, he'll say that, you know, you need to take away the incentives to be on the streets, which means clamping down on begging, making sure no one can stay on the streets for too long, getting people help really quickly. There's also this argument about the pull factor of the fact, when you talk about A Bed Every Night and Andy Burnham's publicising his interest in ending rough sleeping so much and putting in all these initiatives to help rough sleepers, you create a solution for your rough sleeper problem, but you also create demand from other areas. So people will come, if you're homeless in Leeds, you might come to Manchester because you know that you'll get into a bed every night if you're rough sleeping. And then you actually sort of, that means you have more people to try and help. It's dealing with that, because obviously not every area of the country has the same response to rough sleeping. If you're putting forward a really comprehensive thing and you're saying you'll get everyone off the streets, and then if you're homeless where that's not going to happen, you'll go there. So yeah. Again, I couldn't answer the question.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that this has been going on for so many decades and so many places have struggled to come up with a sophisticated response that seems to really, really change things is, I think, signalling that it's going to be a long time before we end the rough sleeping problem, not just in Greater Manchester, but everywhere. And it certainly didn't happen in 2020. Will it happen in the next few years? We'll have to wait and see. This is one we'll return to, so please do get in touch if you have any information or insights you'd like to share. It's just editor@manchestermill.co.uk. For now, thanks very much for joining me, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.